Hi everyone, today we're going to be talking about Mother's Day here in the UAE and a certain someone who's playing Bob Dylan.
We're going to be chatting about Banksy and having a look at why he's all over the news at the moment, and we have a think about the fictional places that we'd like to move to, and we're going to welcome back our man about town.
Yes, he is back with us. Man is not about town, he's here.
Oh, he's here.
This is Culture Bites coming to you from the National News. I'm Inas Rafari.
And I'm Farah Andrews.
So let's kick off Mother's Day. Oh, wait. No, let's talk about how are you? New hair.
Yeah. That's not how I am. I'm just okay. How are you?
Good. I'm trying new hair. You've got new hair.
We've both got new hair. We've come here today. You're doing a different start. It's making you even taller.
Even taller.
I like it.
Why not?
Piled high.
Yeah. Next time I wear heels. Well, put it all on the top. Be a bit of a Marge Simpson.
Bring it all up. And I've cut it all off. But yeah, it's good.
Yeah. For those who are listening to us,
they can't see,
see it.
Yeah. Just imagine. I've got Bob and Asa's got her hair piled high. I'm painting a real word picture.
Fun times. So Mother's Day.
It's Mother's Day this week.
Yay.
Do you celebrate UAE Mother's Day? Do you celebrate British Mother's Day or International Mother's Day, which is your chosen Mother's Day?
I am a big fan of celebrating where you are. Otherwise, it gets very confusing. Mm-hmm. I don't think... First of all, every day is Mother's Day, okay?
Yes, it is.
My children who are listening, every day is Mother's Day.
Every day is Mother's Day.
But I think it's nice to celebrate where you are. It makes more sense. Although, did miss the UK Mother's Day, which is where my mum is. So sorry. Sorry, mum.
Can your mum expect a card?
Yes. I said to her that we will celebrate it for Mother's Day here.
Yeah.
So I need to organise that.
Did your siblings do anything?
Yes, they did.
Okay, that's okay. So she had a day.
Yeah,
she's getting two Mother's Days. What a lucky mum.
What a lucky mum. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really described like that to me. I mean, not that she was throwing shade, but she was a little bit. She was
like... You'd find a silver lining.
She was like, oh, so your brother sent me this and your sister sent me that.
You wait until Thursday.
And she was like, I suppose I'll get your gift when it arrives. I said, yes, mother.
It takes a very long time to post things from the UAE to the UK. It's very unpredictable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. My sister also lives in Dubai, so that's not a great excuse. But
cool.
Anyway, we move. So Mother's Day is coming up. Big day for me. I've already had my card from one child. I've got another one coming, hopefully. I just like the intricacies of their handmade gifts.
I love that.
One time I did get a toilet roll made as a camera.
Very creative.
Very creative. But there's been some other comments that have come out just before the UK Mother's Day.
Yeah, so Lily Allen. So UK Mother's Day was on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And maybe other countries in the world as well, probably not just the UK, but mm-hmm. we're both from the UK, so it makes sense for us. Lily Allen was interviewed by the Radio Times podcast. And
she says some pretty big things.
Yeah.
Also, Lily Allen is a British pop star. She kind of made her name in the early noughties
Don't say that makes me feel ancient.
She did, though.
Oh, no.
She was on MySpace. She was like one of the first big names from MySpace.
She was found on MySpace. Okay, that makes me feel terribly because I was...
It's okay. It's okay to age. We're owning it.
Yeah, it is okay to age.
It's fine. But Lily Allen is somebody who's also owning aging. But she was talking a bit about her career and, like, you know, the turbulence that she's been through. There's been a lot, if you don't follow UK press, there's been a lot in the UK. So she's very much a UK figurehead.
Yeah, very.
But that's not what's
The quotes are quite explosive. Maybe I'm over-amping. She said, my children ruined my career.
Basically.
Quote unquote. Not basically. Quote unquote.
Quote unquote. Yeah. She said, I never really had a strategy when it came to my career. But yes, my children ruined my career. I love them and they complete me. But in terms of pop stardom, totally ruined it.
And so I think that honesty is essential.
It's
right?
Brave. It's so brave. I think there was a time when, like, definitely being a woman and being multifaceted was kind of not really expected. The British press can be particularly like cruel at times, I think, in the early noughties. I think that's fair to say.
100%.
I think we've all grown up. We've all learnt from those mistakes. But I think Lily Allen was definitely a kind of like one of those figures who got often kind of put in the media.
Just put it in
for the right reasons.
We all remember the kind of Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears era of the way they were treated internationally by the press. Lily Allen, I think, is quite an international name. I don't think she's not famous around the world, but that treatment for her was very it was very real, but that was very particularly handled by the British press. So she had that kind of similar treatment around about the same time. There was a lot of her part. Like, she could never do anything right. She was either partying too much. Mm. She was putting on weight, losing too much weight. She was too outspoken. All these things where it was actually, you know, she was just a woman in her early 20s existing in the public eye.
Mm. I did love her style.
Oh yeah. Ball gowns and trainers, like, for a lot of it.
Big ball gowns with these trainers. And I thought that's so cool. I remember buying her first album in Syria. So she was definitely big.
Yeah, she was. Okay, so that's, yeah. And so then the thing that like, you've touched on it. There's like the different facets of being a woman. And obviously the women's, particularly women's magazine industry, which is something that I've like lived in for the last 12 years. It was before I worked at The National. That was where I worked. And so it's like a very big part of like my, like, upbringing as a woman, but also trying to make that in any ways that I could a bit more of like a healthier space for like kind of the content I was writing. There are definitely times that I would have got it wrong, and there are times that I would have done like kind of a different direction I would go in now. But there's the kind of conversation, like having it all, women can have it all, like that term,
conversation, yeah, which is really hard.
So like, it was penned by a Cosmopolitan editor in the 80s.
Ah.
So she, Helen Gurley Brown, wrote a book called Having It All. She was the editor of Cosmopolitan at the time. And it's a book with advice on dealing with men and other women, marriage, career, success, being attractive, having money, staying healthy. So it's having it all. And that standard for women is impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I never drink enough water.
Is that what you've taken away? That's what you took away from that. I'm not hydrated enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Ramadan right now. So.
It's Ramadan right now, so lots of people are dehydrated.
Now it's not like I can't go and tell you to go have some water.
No, but it's, I think there's so much pressure sometimes on women to feel like they are having it all. And I think this was first of all, super duper brave of Lily to say outright. And I think she's always said quite controversial things. She's always put things out there. It's mad to me that it's, feels controversial, but it feels somehow anti-feminist to say something like this, because
I don't think it is.
You don't think so?
I think it's honest.
I think it's very honest, but I think there was this kind of like feminist perception of like women can do it all.
No, but we can't.
But we can't.
You.
But we actually can't.
There
I
is
can't.
No way of doing. And no. I think the kind of acknowledgement that there are things that have something breaks somewhere. So then that's like so. Moving forward from like 1982, when this book was written, to the late 2010s, the then editor of Cosmo UK was a woman called Farah Storr.
Farah?
Yeah, another Farah. And she wrote a book called The Discomfort Zone. But she spoke a lot about how having it all just is not possible, and how she basically chose career success over having a family, because she wasn't going to be able to do both. And she got to a certain age, and that is what she had chosen. But women make this decision constantly. Like,
I think we make a decision, or there's another theory, which is like, you're just not perfect at something. So you can, like, I feel like I'm doing quite well in my job. I really enjoy my job. But I do think there's like, I'm not going to be the perfect mum at all times. Right? Or I'm not going to be the perfect employee maybe at all times. But there's something, it will kind of like seesaw.
Yeah.
A bit.
And there's support structures, right?
Yeah.
So this isn't going to be like a 10 minute rant about the patriarchy, which I definitely could do. It wouldn't be 10 minutes. But like the way historically the framework has been set up is that men succeeded at work because they had a support system via their wife and their nuclear family who made dinner for them, looked after the children, and things were okay at home. This is the traditional setup. And if that is people's setup, that's absolutely fine. I'm not dismissive of that setup. But that is not a woman having a career. And so in order for a woman to have a career and to have children, she has to have a framework of support around her, whether that's her husband, whether that's her spouse, whether that is help. Because you can't go, there is just not enough time in the day for a woman to go to the gym, look after her children, help with homework, make dinner, keep, like, make a house tidy, and do 9 hours of work And also maybe have a minute to themselves, because mental health should not be the thing that slides off here. Physical health should not be the thing that slides off here. And the only reason why in the past it's worked is because men had that support system through women.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And so obviously there are people that, like, you make it work, but you have a support system.
Sorry, I'm just twitching. I do make it work, don't I? No, I think, I think obviously I live here and I think a lot of women here do have extra support, yeah. Which is, you know, by our amazing housekeepers and nannies, which I think has kept me sane. So we cannot dismiss that the work that's considered a woman's job is 110% valued and is probably like the most valuable thing in a household. And there is a monetary value to that. Whether it's seen as a paycheck or not a paycheck, there's definitely a monetary value to that work. But I think, yeah, it's hard. Like, as me as a mother and as somebody who works, I still find it difficult.
So, like, on the Lily Allen point, like, I don't think it's unfeminist for her to say something slipped.
I think some people, I don't think I'm saying that it's unfeminist.
No, I'm not saying that you're saying
that. But I think that some people will see it like that, that because, you know, that there was this old feminist idea that to be a feminist was to be like, women can do everything. But like, that's not actually like, I think that's not genuine.
But I don't think she's, and she's even necessarily saying that women can't do everything, because she is now she's obviously trying to revive her career. She's doing interviews. She's out in public.
So she's got a new podcast. How dare she?
Has she?
Yeah.
Her and Makita Oliver are doing something together,
yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
I have actually
haven't listened to that podcast. Don't listen to it. It's not as good as
There's
ours.
There's room for more than one. We can play nice. And Lily Allen's probably going to promote it quite well.
Yeah. Fair.
I don't know if I'm repeating myself, but my interpretation of it is more like the kind of the feminist thing there is kind of like speaking with kind of honesty about the fact that people should not beat themselves up if something's like exactly what you said, something slips. So she focused on motherhood for a little while because that's what she had to do.
Yeah.
And releasing three albums in that time wasn't feasible. Like, I mean, if we look at other people like Rihanna, she has, yeah, her focus has changed. She isn't making music at the moment.
Yeah, she's just taking some time.
She's got probably small kids. Busy in a million other ways and doing, I mean, she's got $1 billion.
Apparently they don't have a nanny. I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true, but apparently...
Her and Aesop.
Aesop. We love Aesop. But yeah, apparently they don't, yeah, they're just doing it themselves. I read that.
Same.
You know?
But then yeah. She can't go on tour.
Yeah, she can't go on tour. So yeah, something gives, but well done, Lily, for being so brave or honest. Honest, we've decided it's honest.
Yeah, for being honest.
Okay, there's another story in the cultural hub, which is like, it really caught my eye.
Tell me.
Okay, so you know last week I tried to convince you of June.
Yeah.
And you were not convinced. Well,
I didn't.
Timothée, his name is Timothée, by the way.
I've heard.
Not
I've,
Timothy.
But I've, he said you can say it as you say it.
Oh, really?
The same as
Timothée
what I say.
Chalamet.
I'm not going to sit here and offend our French listeners by
it's
by
playing
French
Bob
accent.
Dylan, and like the first photos have arrived of like him as Bob Dylan. Now, look, I know he's a hot actor at the moment, but it's raised some eyebrows. People
so
are
I've
raising.
Seen these photos.
Yeah,
and people, what do you think of them?
Okay, look, I think he's obviously a hot ticket actor at the moment. He's in like all the big blockbusters. I think that sometimes casting directors can get a bit excited about getting the big name and actually forget what they're looking for from the role.
I can see the direction they went in. He's quirky. He's got like a Bob Dylan hasn't got like, he's got, Bob Dylan's got quite a quirky face and vibe, but Timothy's not bringing it.
I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan as well.
Same.
Right? So I think there's going to be lots of people out there who'll be looking at Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan has become like Nobel Prize winner. He is somebody who's considered like a poet, not just a musician.
Yeah.
He is, he changed our lives, kind of like, you know, artist.
Yes. Yeah,
so I think you
put seminal.
Yeah. Putting any kind of like anybody in that role, you were going to raise some eyebrows.
I'm going to describe what Timothy's wearing because this isn't a visual platform. So I'm going to paint a picture. He looks like Keira Knightley in the early 2000s mixed with the Artful Dodger from Oliver Twist. We're looking at...
A long scarf.
He's wearing, like, he's got a guitar case in one hand, scruffy jeans. He's wearing, like, a jacket with an orange scarf, the little paperboy hat. So the kind of scarf and hat combo is what kind of is taking people down the Keira Knightley route. The scruffy jacket... very Artful Dodger, his hair, I don't know, like
did Bob Dylan look like the Artful Dodger?
There's probably crossover.
I genuinely think, is it Jeremy Allen?
Jeremy Allen White.
Yes. Now, so he played the head chef in The Bear, and he's kind of like this more edgy, rough, rustic actor. And I was like, gosh, you know what? If you wanted a big name on your Bob Dylan piece, yep, I would have chosen him.
There's nothing he can do wrong.
Right. And so I typed into Google, as you do when you have these thoughts, oh, I wonder if anybody else was thinking like me. And lo and behold.
The whole of the internet.
The whole of the internet is thinking just like me. There was a whole Reddit, subreddit, I think, dedicated to the fact that he should have been given the role and not Timothée, which it's not very nice for Timothée, but it's...
Hopefully Timothée is staying away from that part of the internet. Timothée's people should protect him from that corner of Reddit.
I wonder how much he Googles himself.
Oh my gosh. Probably quite a lot, actually. Him and Kylie. Here's my question for you.
Go for it.
Do we need another Bob Dylan biopic?
Well, not right now.
No.
Bob Dylan's still kicking.
He's still kicking. In 2007, we had I'm Not There, which wasn't just a straight biopic. Six people play Bob Dylan. We had Cate Blanchett, Christian Bale, Marcus Carl Franklin, Richard Gere, Ben Whishaw, and Heath Ledger in his final role.
Ah, I need to rewatch that.
Six Bobs. Now we're getting a seventh.
I mean, that must have been quite an accomplishment for that casting director.
The casting director must have been thrilled with themselves. They did have the ultimate workaround of like, this isn't Bob Dylan. This is the different facets of his personality. And if you can't visualize that, that's more on you than me.
Thanks for that. Making that clear. Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. I just don't think we need it right now. He's still alive and kicking. But if I were to cast someone, it would have been somebody else, not Timothée.
Well, it would have been Jeremy for you.
Yeah, 100%. Anyone for you?
Mm-hmm. You put Jeremy in my head, so that's what I want.
Hey,
let's start a campaign. I've just said I don't want any more Bob Dylan. So look at how fickle I'm being. That goes from no one. Listen, we've peaked at Cate Blanchett playing Bob Dylan for me, and that's where I will stay.
Fair.
That's my line.
Moving on. So
what are we moving on to?
We are moving on to...
You've covered my notes.
Famous. Sorry.
I'm
famous Banksy.
Banksy.
The graffiti artist from Bristol.
And yeah.
True identity. There's been a new art piece has sprung up in London in Finsbury Park. He does art pieces all over the world. He's famous for like a whole hotel in the West Bank.
Yeah, he's got an awful lot of pieces in Palestine. The walled off hotel in the West Bank.
Walled off.
Which is
clever.
And there was an awful lot of
And his holding, isn't his company called Pest Control?
Yeah.
Just brilliant.
I think a lot about Exit Through the Gift Shop, just like the kind of criticism of the art industry's commercial side.
Very funny.
And Dismal Land, where he made, did you see that?
Yeah, I didn't go to it. I wish I went to it.
It was a coastal holiday resort in the UK. I'm not going to say like a town because it would probably be quite offensive, me being like, probably in. And it was meant to be like a kind of, it was like a Disney ripoff, Dismal Land, and then very critical of that machine.
It was very, very funny. It was whole theme park set around like kind of like a Banksy ideas of what, you know.
Yeah, and operating. So it was like very interactive art. But there's a new piece that popped up. There was Banksy's trademark few days of is it, isn't it, is it, isn't it. And so day of recording has been confirmed. Day of listening will have been confirmed a few days ago that it is a Banksy.
Yeah.
So we can kind of describe it. It was like a tree, which is a real tree.
It's a real tree.
That's been chopped down kind of to for the city, like growing. There's got, yeah, it's kind of like a pulled apart tree.
You do have to prune a tree quite hard. Yeah, somebody who's had a few trees in their lives. Like, you can't just let a tree get too overgrown. Pruning it back helps it. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well,
so
then,
like, don't think it was like, oh, they chopped down the tree. Like, sometimes you have to prune. This tree may have been pruned a bit too much.
It's been heavily pruned. I mean, that's true, but nature was naturing before we got involved with pruning.
Fair. So anyway, but this tree is pruned back. It's a natural tree, but behind it is where the art piece is.
Yeah, he's painted a big green
splotch. Hammered,
yeah, I was going to try and find another word. Motif. So it's a whole mural. It's like the whole side of a building is green, kind of filling in the leaves, if as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's like a figurine in the corner, which is holding what appears to be like a spray, like what you a paint sprayer. So kind of like, I think, again, he's so smart. He's so clever. He's using that kind of like tongue-in-cheek, almost humour to comment on something on society.
What do you think about Banksy and his anonymity? Do you want him to be outed?
No.
Neither do I.
No.
Like, the anonymity is what's fun about it, right?
And it's also, like, why? Like, I think, like, if you're an artist who's made a name and a reputation for themselves by their art only, then that's enough.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to drill or, like, pull everybody into this kind of, like, space if they don't want to be.
And people know who he is.
Yeah.
There's plenty about it. There's like a whole story from quite a while ago that still very much gets circulated. So this, yeah, people know who he is.
People know who he is. But there are some people, I think this is just highlighted, there's two art collectors at the moment who are taking legal action against the graffiti artist's company, Pest Control Office, following alleged refusal to confirm the authenticity of a piece. So I can imagine for some art collectors who are spending thousands on these kind of Banksy pieces, that they want it confirmed.
But that's exactly his point. His point is, if you're stupid enough to buy an artwork for thousands that's not confirmed, that's on you.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
Like,
fair. And so they did buy the pieces.
I don't know. We don't know the background of this sale. If a third party had confirmed this is Banksy and now it's unconfirmed, that's tricky. That's murky, murky waters.
Yeah.
But if there's like a piece that is not assigned Banksy, it's very, the tracing art and what an art piece is and who it's by, it's very doable. Although, like, think about like the kind of classic artists that we're looking back at now, and you have conversations constantly about, is this a Leonardo da Vinci? Is this a Picasso? Blah, 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 blah. There's like, what is art? Is the art the final piece that they wanted shown in a museum? Is it the 5,000 sketches they did in the run-up to that work? Like, yeah, like for someone like Banksy, people want like every element they can get, which leads us to our next point about the auction. But like, if they aren't pieces that were kind of meant to be out there in the world, that they aren't kind of authenticated.
Yeah.
It's murky.
It's kind of fun. Do you remember that piece where he shredded it?
Yeah, I loved auction? That.
So for those of you who don't know, there was a Banksy piece went up for auction and it was in this quite ornate frame. And then just as it hit sold, the piece shredded itself. So it must have had like an active, must have been someone in the auction house.
He
who
was
worked
in
for
the
Banksy,
room or somebody was in the room.
And they just shredded the piece live on stage.
Half shredded it.
So it
became
more.
Worth way more. It was like, now it's one of his most famous pieces.
As soon as it was sold.
Yeah.
He like destroyed it and then now it's worth more. Anyway, fun thing to do. Would you do that?
Would I shred my own art?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so unable to do art. If I produce something, would I shred it? Absolutely not. It would be framed. It would be in a museum that I created for myself. Because if I was Banksy and I was producing art left, right and center, yeah, I'd be shredding it every day. But no, I would not shred anything I created because I'm not able. Fair. You're able. Would you shred your work?
If it was going to be like a bit of a statement.
Tripled in price.
But it wouldn't be my money.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
That's the other thing.
Well, there's been a lot of opinions here from me, so let's move on.
Yeah, should we move on? So
let's move on to a merry new subject.
This is something that you've brought up that you want to talk about. So where has this even come from? What is going on?
Do you actually want to know where it's come from?
Yeah.
This is a premiere in survey that got sent to my inbox that I loved. My inbox is a treasure trove. And sometimes I get surveys from Premier Inn, the hotel chain.
The hotel chain sent you a survey.
Yes.
And now this is what we're talking about on Culture Bites.
Yes. Is that not culture? I do believe so. No, it is culture. It's a survey about the places and the fictional towns that people would most like to travel to. And I could not stop thinking about it. Because where would I like to travel to? Everywhere. So where do you think is the, oh my gosh, why did I print this out so small? I need my glasses. Where do you think is the fictional place that people are the most interested in?
Oh, will it be Harry Potter?
Shall I set some parameters?
So
this is based
Hogwarts.
On search interest.
Search interest.
So that's how my good friends at Premier Inn have collated this information.
They've basically done Google. They've looked at Google.
Let's not oversimplify something so complicated, my friend.
Okay.
Yeah, they've looked at Google, yeah.
So if this was my children, they'd say Arendelle.
It's on my list.
No way.
Look at how small this is. I'm so sorry. It's tiny. It is Arendelle. Number nine.
So it must be, I suppose my children can't use Google.
Your children aren't Googling yet.
So it must be Hogwarts. Hogwarts must be number one.
Hogwarts is pretty high. It's number three.
Number three?
Yeah.
Okay. One more guess. I find all fictional places
I would
quite
like
dark.
You to know that this is from television, film, and potentially literature. So it's just fictional places, if that
totally
makes things easier.
Totally fictional places. I can't give up. Gotham?
Yeah, number one.
Gotham. They're so dark.
I would not like to live in Gotham.
No one wants to live in Gotham.
Well, no. In 2023... 169,690 people expressed interest in moving to Gotham.
I bet they
per my good friends at Premier Inn.
I think that they probably thought it was a real place.
That's what I think, because Gotham does give real
Chicago vibes.
Yeah, and I also think that there's probably a lot of people have Googled like where is Gotham.
Yeah. It's in Warner Brothers World, here.
Here it is.
In Abu Dhabi.
I think it's kind of like a New York, Philadelphia, Chicago hybrid, right?
Yeah, but way darker, obviously.
But dark.
I mean, my children, when we go to Warner Brothers, they won't go in there. They think it's too
scary.
It is
scary.
So we always have to go to the other section of Warner Brothers World.
Where do you think is the... I mean, we're not going to do the whole top 10 because we're here for days. But number two, Atlantis. Also location in the UAE.
Yeah, also location. Wait. What is that from? What film is that from? Aquaman?
Atlantis. Just the whole world of Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. But people did think that was real for a really long time.
Exactly.
Some people do think it's real. But it's actually a Greek myth. Do we know this?
City, I think so, yeah.
It's a Greek myth. Just to kind of like make their army stronger.
Number three. You've already mentioned it.
Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number four. Agrabah.
Agrabah. I remember as a child, I think this is the last one we should mention.
This might come as a shock to people that it's not real.
It's not real. What's not in Dubai?
Look, that isn't a place I can go to on holiday.
But I used to live in Aqabah.
Oh.
And I genuinely was like, maybe Disney based it on Aqabah.
Probably.
And when they did Aladdin, when they filmed it, old Will Smith stayed in Aqabah.
Of course he did. You said you wanted to finish with Aqabah. I would like to finish with Stars Holiday. I'd like to finish with Stars Hollow, the setting of Gilmore Girls, a TV show that I love.
Oh.
Would I live there? Yes.
That's so on brand for you.
I know.
So on brand. Is that your fictional place?
No.
What would be your fictional place if I was to say, go on, you can live any fictional place?
Hogsmeade and Harry Potter.
Another Harry Potter reference.
A little town.
Is it a town?
In my head, it's always snowy. And that's only really because in the films and the books, they visit in winter.
Oh.
So yeah, I'd like to live in Hogsmeade, please, if you don't mind.
Nice,
where'd you like to go?
I thought about this. The island in Moana.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. I love coconuts.
You're a sunshine girl.
I really love sunshine. I love the beach. I love the water. I'd kind of like to live a bit more simple.
Yeah.
Life. So
you like seafood?
I love seafood. And I just think that, like, I think that's the vibe for me. A grass skirt.
Yeah, I think
flowers in my hair.
So I'll have cozy weekends in a little fictional pub setting.
Oh, you with love a little, winter.
With a little, like, nice shopping streets, some magic. I'm so up for it. And you'll be dancing on a beach.
Love it.
That is pretty good summer for both of us, I think. Look who we have.
He's here.
He's back.
He's in the building.
I have arrived. Hello.
We've missed you.
I missed you guys. You know, when I was watching clips and the whole thing, obviously, I was like, I need to be there to give my opinion on Kate and all this interesting stuff that's been happening the past 2 weeks. So,
well, let's get your opinion now on what I would describe as the hottest topic of the week.
Yeah, right.
Which fictional town would you like to live in?
Fictional town I'd like to live in. Actually, when you guys were talking about that, you mentioned Agrabah. Did you know that Agrabah is a combination of Baghdad and Bagara, which is an ancient city in South India? So they combined the two aesthetics, the two histories of the country, cities, to create Agrabah. Oh. Even the palace that Jasmine's
from. We needed
you
here to learn.
See, we just learned.
It looks like the Taj Mahal, but also a bit of old Baghdad. So people don't usually know that. That's why even the film is a mixture of Bollywood and like an Arab kind of vibe. So...
it was based on the fictional character Alaeddin
from A Thousand and One Nights. But yeah, fictional town I'd love to live in, I mean, Hogsmeade is a brilliant one. I'd love Hogsmeade. Or I would love to live in Narnia.
Yeah. Love it.
Beautiful. Turkish delight.
I forgot about Narnia.
Wintry heaven.
Yeah, and Turkish delight to Ramadan. So Ramadan Kareem.
Ramadan Kareem. We haven't seen you.
We have not seen each other. So
how's Ramadan been for you?
It's been good. I was sort of thinking in my head, oh yeah, my 2 week break will be, you know, rest and relaxation, but it's been rest, relaxation, Ramadan, and plenty of regret, because, you know, like when you're on leave, you think I'm going to do this and this and this, but I only managed to do like the of this. You know, I had a whole list of stuff, but you know, it always
the errands. They just
the
build
errands,
up.
The house
admin.
Yeah, admin. I'm not going to redo my closet. I'm going to do this, but I just watch Netflix. Speaking of which.
Hello. Right. Here we are.
Hi, we are.
The said king is
exactly.
back.
Exactly. Yeah. So I watched a lot of Netflix shows that I've been looking forward to. Some, you know, none of them are super bad, but they all could have been much better.
Okay. So I think that's quite a good way of defining quite a lot of content. That goes on that
yeah. It wasn't bad, but it was not great either. So the first one I want to talk about is Avatar The Last Airbender. Have you guys... that's a place I would love to live in, actually. So have you guys ever heard of Avatar The Last Airbender?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
So it was a Nickelodeon animated show that came out in like the mid-2000s, and it became a huge, huge, like cult, massive, like people are obsessed with it. Mm. And it's this animated show that has just three seasons, and it's set in a world where there's the Earth Nation, the Fire Nation, the Water Nation, and the Air Nation, and each people in those nations, like kind of like wizards, they have the power to manipulate or bend that element. So
this has got nothing to do with James Cameron and Pandora.
Nothing. It's very confusing. Exactly. It's very confusing. But yeah, nothing to do that with that. And so each nation has a bunch of people who can control the element. But then there's the Avatar, who can control all four elements, and he has to save the world and keep it in balance. And the Fire Nation's taking over the world, and he's been born to sort of like create balance in the world. So, like I was saying, huge animated show. About 10 years ago, M. Night Shyamalan, Sixth Sense director of fame, attempted to do a film, and it bombed so badly that the fans of the show were like, this is ridiculous, we're walking out. And it's like, a big black mark on M. Night Shyamalan's career, this film. So then like...
plot twist he couldn't have foreseen.
Yeah, exactly. But then 4 or 5 years ago, Netflix announced they're doing a live action series working with the Nickelodeon creators of the show. Mm-hmm. So the fandom went crazy. They were so excited. And there was like some images came out a couple of years ago. They looked the CGI looked really brilliant. But then randomly the writers who invented the show walked away from the project with no explanation.
So, ominous.
Very ominous. Everyone was like really worried about what the show was going to be like. But this is what I find very confusing about Netflix. They have the budget, they have great star power, they have amazing CGI and animation, and as I was watching the show when it got released, like I think the first week of Ramadan, is that it has all the right elements, but something just is amiss. Like, it felt like I was watching the whole series that we've seen just squished up into one series, and there was this continuous, like, feeling of every single moment is supposed to be like this big epic moment that's going to be a soundbite, that's going to be a meme, that's going to be like something that you share, you know? And if you got, you know, I mean, you guys know when you watch a film or a show, or even when you listen to music, you need to have silent bits, like bits where there's humor.
There has to be
highs and lows,
highs and lows,
dark, and light.
Exactly. It can't just be all like intense. No. Do you know what I mean? So that was my biggest gripe with it. Like, it felt like it stripped away a lot of the very candid, lovable, memorable things from the show, which is like the fun parts, the funny characteristics of each character, or even just them hanging out and talking, as opposed to every scene is like crazy CGI, flying animals, and, you know, it was just a lot of overstimulation. Okay. You know what I mean?
So should we give it a miss?
No, you should watch it with your family, because it's a very family-friendly show. But it made me realize the next film I saw, which is like, I think, number one now on Netflix, it's Damsel. Have you guys seen
this?
Yes, I've been seen a lot of talk about it.
Yes. A lot of advertising for this on my Netflix.
Millie Bob Thornton.
Millie Bob Brown.
Bobby Brown. But Billy Thornton, you know.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, it's just the Bob confuses me.
Bobby a friend Brown, of mine said Millie I look Bob like Brown. Her. I don't think I do.
No, I don't think you
no,
do.
I do.
It's such a weird thing to say. I was like, thanks. That was nice.
I think your friend was trying to get on your good side, or maybe your bad side.
I don't know. She's very young.
She's very young. That's good.
I'll take that.
She's
we'll
very
that.
Confident. She's very well spoken, very talkative. I really like I'm watching her in interviews. So she's the star of the film, but it's, again, it's like it's like a reimagining of the damsel in distress kind of taking control of her own power. It's set like in a random, you know, mythical place where Millie Bob's character, she's marrying this lovely prince, and then I'm not giving anything away, this is all in the trailer.
Yeah.
And then he kind of sacrifices her to the dragon to keep his kingdom safe. And the whole thing is, how is she going to fight this dragon and win?
I don't know why I found it so funny that you called her Millie Bob.
Is her name just Millie?
I don't know, but I like Millie Bob.
We haven't got over it.
Yeah, it's like Sarah Jessica Parker. I think it's like one of those double...
It's definitely Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown.
But anyway, so she's this damsel in distress.
Yes, but
character.
She's not in distress. That's the whole thing.
She's fighting back.
Yeah, and she's like fighting back with the dragon. But again, as I watched it, it's the same... It's an interesting premise. Great acting, great cast. Angela Bassett, her...
Ray Winston's in it, right?
Who?
He's the... Ray Winston. A very gruff gangster.
Yes, yeah. He's her dad.
Cool.
Married to Angela Bassett, who's her stepmom. So it's just really great cast and great acting. But then again, it was the same thing. I'm like, am I watching Avatar again? It's like this, no thought has been put into the story. It's more like, how can we just create really cool scenes that are going to go viral on Instagram? I feel like that's it. Do you know what I mean?
That's
what's happening with this, you know, this TikTok generation, these Gen Zs that, you know, don't understand the importance of storytelling, you know? We have to keep them entertained.
Man, this is a very opinion-filled episode, yeah, and I love it.
Man's just letting... This is, some feelings.
This is what happens when I fast. I'm hungry for food, and I take it out on, like, over-the-top opinions.
Which is great for us,
yeah. But watch it, sure, but don't expect too much.
Okay.
However...
Oh, hello.
Expect a lot from The Gentleman by Guy Ritchie.
Right.
I've seen this.
You've seen it? You finished it? I have like 3 episodes left.
I have not watched it yet. I've watched the film.
Yes.
Which also stars Ray Winston. He's been everywhere this week.
He's everywhere.
No, he's in the TV show, not the film.
I felt like The Gentleman, the film, was brilliant. He is in the TV show as well.
Right.
He's not in the film.
Are you going to watch the TV show? Yeah, are you a Guy Ritchie fan?
Am I Guy? Like, it's not my number one.
It's not on brand for you.
But I don't mind it. I really like The Gentleman. I really like The Gentleman.
He was so
I love Lock, Stock, Snatch.
Yeah, he's...
But I've seen them.
So good.
Actually, and also, he did Aladdin.
Did he?
Guy Ritchie is our theme today, guys. Yeah, he did Aladdin. And he's
our invisible thread.
He did do the Sherlock Holmes as well. I really like those.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
And he's doing Hercules. You guys know the live action of Hercules?
There's another one.
Yeah.
Guy Ritchie's busy.
He is. He's a busy man. When he was here with Jason Statham for their film, was it something?
Beekeeper. Was he that?
I don't know.
That
they came.
Rings a bell. In my head.
I feel like maybe sit out of the action.
I saw that because someone went to the Jason Statham event here.
So I went there. Oh, sorry, go on.
As you were.
I went there and he was there with Jason Statham and I asked a very cheeky question. I was like, is Jason going to be in the Hercules remake that you're doing? And he was like, oh, well, you know, I can't really talk about that. Oh, that's my Guy Ritchie voice. But he didn't really give anything away. But I was like, oh, that'd be cool if he had Jason Statham in. Because I assume Jason Statham would be in The Gentleman because it feels like very his kind of vibe.
It's because Jason Statham is in films surrounding Jason Statham, though.
Yeah.
And The Gentleman has other well-rounded characters.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a huge Jason Statham fan, but...
I like him.
Because I just love action films.
Same.
But
Gentleman is brilliant. It's good.
It's really funny.
It's great storytelling, and it's high production value, great acting. Theo James, is that his name?
Yes. Yeah.
He's in it. He's wonderful. He should be more famous. He's great. And it has this woman who, I don't know her real name in life, but her name is Susan Glass on the show. She's great. His yes. kind of like love
I think
interest.
She was in Skins as well.
Oh, right.
So I never she's got a bit Skins. Of a cult following herself.
Yeah. It's a great show. Like, it's Guy Ritchie through and through in the best Guy Ritchie way. So I definitely recommend you watch that if you want something like that has substance to watch, but that has hits all the marks. Action, funny, good acting, you know, great storytelling, you know, something social, you know. So
love
it's
it.
Good.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm going to add it to my list.
I like this. Man Not About Town during Ramadan.
Man About Netflix.
No, man.
I love that.
And also, I did read, and you guys know I like reading, but I want to recommend some great Ramadan reads in an article that I wrote just before I went on leave about like novels that will help you to think about life, to reflect. And they're all mostly written by authors of color or Muslim authors. So there's three, I have to think a list of like more than 10, but I'm going to mention three that I really, really love. The first one, you've probably all heard of it, 40 Rules of Love by Elif Shafak.
Very famous writer.
Very famous author, Turkish author, you know, great book. She's a wonderful writer. And the book is one of the very rare novels that goes into the life of Rumi Jalaluddin, mm-hmm. who is the famous poet, one of the most sold poets, I think, in the US, which is so random. So he is the Persian poet who is Muslim, and then he met somebody called Shams al-Tabriz, who was kind of like a mystic.
Whirling dervish.
A whirling dervish mystic who kind of changed the course of Rumi's life. And you sort of see their relationship and how that very intellectual, spiritual relationship affected his family and affected Rumi's family and how they viewed him. And at the same time, alternating chapters are in contemporary time of this woman going through a divorce who is reading a book about Rumi at the same time and how that affects her. So it's one of those like story in a story,
I like
a story
this.
Things.
Kind of dual narratives.
So, yeah, it's a nice book.
Didn't Beyonce name her kid Rumi?
She did, which makes no sense to me because Rumi actually means he from Rome, because at that time Rumi, like Afghanistan and Iran were part of the Roman Empire, I think, or something. So when you call somebody Rumi, it's like saying he from Rome. So she's sort of saying her child is from Rome, but makes no sense really.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes any sense. I did find a really fun Instagram account though about Rumi, which is basically this like Persian literate who goes through the Rumi quotes on American websites and debunks them.
Oh,
I'll send it to you.
That's great. That sounds really good. Because he's one of those misquoted, you know, anything that
very
sounds
misquoted.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a Rumi quote. No, it's not.
It's not actually. It's just
anything
something.
Anything quite spiritual, Rumi. Anything quite feminist. Roosevelt. It's like, yeah, like those kind of massive misquotes. No.
Those like Instagram posts with like, you know, the sunset and then the words written on top.
I was like, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stop.
Always leave them waiting. You know, that's her famous line. Another novel I want to talk about is The Baghdad Clock by Shahad Arrawi. She's an Iraqi author. She's actually based in Dubai. And she wrote the novel in Arabic and it got translated into English. And I think it won the Edinburgh First Book Prize.
Beautiful.
It's a wonderful novel. It's like a bit of magic realism set in Baghdad during the 1991 Gulf War, where three girls meet at a bomb shelter, three teenagers, and they kind of befriend each other. And you see their lives in the following years. But what's interesting is that while they're in the bomb shelter, a man from the future arrives and tells them, this is what's going to happen to your neighborhood in Baghdad in like 20 years' time. Basically like having a premonition of the 2003 war. And so they decide after that to start recording everything that's happening in the neighborhood in case the neighborhood disappears in the next war. And then you see them meeting every couple of years. And as they grow into young women and then into adults, how this like record keeping of the neighborhood also affects and changes them. It's very beautiful and very accessibly written.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
That sounds so good. Also, love a sci-fi.
I love a sci-fi, yes, speculative fiction, magic realism.
That would make a good like gift for someone, wouldn't it?
The book, yeah. All of these books, by the way, would be make a good list, and they'd all make really great films. Or so Netflix, if you're listening,
bring Man on as a producer.
Yeah, the last one is one of my favorite novels. It's called Minaret by Leila Abu Ayla. She's a Saudi British author, and it is a novel that switches between the past and the present of this one woman who is, she's a young socialite in Sudan, but then she and her family have to escape to Britain. And in the present time, she works as a maid or a housekeeper in the UK. And she keeps going back in time to, and explains how she fell from the height of society to being a woman who's, you know, cleans houses in the UK. And she's kind of reflecting over her life, comparing it to her present life and what it all means. It's a really beautifully told novel about life and reflection, coming to terms with who your family are and your country and where you belong. So I'd recommend people also read that.
That sounds lovely.
And for the full list,
for the full list, yeah, on the National website, on Arts and Culture, or just, you know, write my name in the search and read all my articles.
That's Man with a Double A.
Yeah.
That's it for today, and thank you so much for listening.
And if you like this episode, please follow and subscribe on your favourite podcasting app and tell all your friends and family. Bye.
Bye.